Cosmic Shed. Hello, and welcome to a very cold Cosmic Shed. Just me, Andrew, in the shed at the moment, but it's been a busy shed of late. Michaela Musilova joined us for our episode on The Martian back in 2015, where we first had Andy Weir as a guest. And we were talking about the book way before the film came out. And Michaela joined us as an astrobiologist to talk about astrobiology and a mission that she'd done in an analogue version of Mars in the Mars station at the Utah desert, where they send people to test out what it would be like for astronauts to be on Mars. And for the next 8 months, Michaela is going back to Mars, this time in Hawaii. And brilliantly, Michaela has said that she will send us here at the Cosmic Shed weekly updates of what's going on in her analogue of Mars, in that Mars habitat on the volcano on the big island of Hawaii. I'll let Michaela tell you all about it. I spoke to her earlier today.
How's, of course, it's been a long time. How's things?
Yeah, well, it's been interesting. Yeah. I live a very different life nowadays than before, but it's still exciting. I mean, I don't know. I guess we've been on Facebook for some time.
Yeah.
But I'm basically the chair of the Slovak Organization for Space Activity, so something like Slovakia Space Office. Yeah. So I've gone from doing, you know, my normal astrobiology stuff to, you know, launching satellites and developing suborbital rockets. And so I've become a bit of an engineer in some ways. So that's been a big change. And I became a visiting professor at a university in Slovakia. And I'm kind of bringing astrobiology to Slovakia and the Czech Republic. So, you know, pretty exciting times. And yeah, now I'm basically 2 and something days away from being locked up for 8 months. So.
Tell us what's going to happen then in 2 days.
So, yes, in 2 days' time, in the afternoon of Thursday, the 15th of February, we're officially going to enter the Martian habitat, or this dome we have here in Hawaii. It's about 2,500 meters high up on the side of a volcano, Mauna Loa. And the habitat is in the shape of a dome. It's only 11 meters across in diameter, so very small in terms of surface area, where we have to spend 8 months. And basically, yeah, we're simulating actually being on the surface of Mars. So in a, say, 2-year round-trip mission to Mars in the future, we're simulating the part where the astronauts actually land on the surface of Mars, live in a certain habitat there for that period of time, do research outside where you wear simulated spacesuits and you go on so-called EVAs, extravehicular activities, and the rest of the time you're basically living inside this dome basically with just the supplies you need for the entire mission. So you go there with a certain amount of food, water, your electricity supplied through solar panels there, like you would have on Mars. Of course, now we're developing other technologies for Mars, but we're simulating what we have at the moment. And we're going to be living lives like astronauts, where basically mission control from Earth is going to be dictating what we need to do every day, from what time we wake up, eat, exercise, to do all our different types of work we have to do, research, until what time we go to bed. So yeah, it's going to be a very difficult lifestyle we'll have there. You know, we'll be completely disconnected from Earth in many ways, in the sense that, for example, we'll only have access to this special kind of email from which we can email people on Earth, but it'll be delayed by 20 minutes each way. So for example, even if there's a crisis situation, it will take at least 40 minutes to get an answer back from Earth to help us deal with the situation. That's it. And then no, obviously no live video streams, nothing like that.
Yeah.
So that, of course, has impact on our personal lives as well. Some people on the crew, you know, have girlfriends, boyfriends, which they're leaving behind. That's their only way they're going to be able to communicate during 8 months. And actually what's interesting about our crew, so we're the first crew of only 4 people.
Okay.
To go on such a long duration mission, and we're a fully international crew. So even though this simulation is funded and in a way, let's say, requested by NASA, no one on the crew is American.
Okay.
And so that's pretty interesting. And I'm actually looking forward to it because we've been now here in Hawaii for the past almost week. Actually, I arrived almost 6 days ago now. And it's a kind of training pre-mission time for us to get to know all the different research tasks we'll have to do during the mission, prepare for them, get some basic training. For example, in geology, the last 2 days we've been in a national park in Hawaii, kind of exploring the volcanic terrain and the features we will come across in our simulated mission on Mars. So things that are similar to what you would find on Mars today. So it will help us identify the different features, the different rock samples we'll need to collect for the researchers back on Earth, put it that way. And it's actually been a great bonding experience. I think we have a great crew, and hopefully all will go well. But after all, it is 8 months of just seeing three other people all day, every day.
Yeah.
No escape. Even if there's conflict, you know, you're stuck inside this dome, and the only time you got is on an EVA. And even then, that's, you know, monitored the whole time. You basically have walkie-talkies or equivalent. So you can't exactly go on an EVA and just sing to yourself because everyone is going to hear your
singing. Yeah, no, quietly cursing your crewmates on an EVA.
Exactly.
Who are the other three people then?
We have Sukjin Han, who's from South Korea. But he's actually working as an assistant professor at a university in the U.S. I don't want to say the wrong name. It's in Texas.
Okay.
But I would need to check exactly which one. Then Lisa Stojanovsky, she's from Australia. And she's going to be, her role is mission specialist for communications. So that's everything from outreach and media communications and educational projects. We have a few that we're planning on doing during the mission, to basically communicating with mission support, equivalent of, you know, kind of like NASA Houston, who's monitoring everything that we're doing and helping us if there's a difficult situation. And we have to monitor our own life support system, so how much water we're using, and, you know, if we're not going to get CO2 poisoning or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So she's kind of going to help with that communication part. And then we have an engineer on the crew, Callum Hervier. He's from the UK. And even though he studied astrophysics, he's actually going to be in charge of more of these life support systems. So he's actually going to be monitoring that everything is working as it should be so that we don't die on Mars, basically.
That would be ideal. And what's your role?
So I'm the mission scientist. So I'm in charge of basically all the research, every single research project that we'll be doing there. And that's everything from, say, individual things that we'll do. For example, I'll have a rover from Slovakia that I'm bringing there with me. So I'll be doing a lot of research with that. You know, each of the crew members have their own kind of research or outreach project they'll be working on. So I need to make sure that's all running smoothly to the research projects that are actually kind of done on us. So in a way, we're kind of like the lab rats that people are testing various, say, psychological experiments on, because the main purpose of these long duration simulated missions is actually to check, you know, how to choose a crew that will be able to survive the, say, 2 year mission to Mars and back without too many conflicts, without the mission failing because, you know, people are going to want to kill each other, or they're just not going to want to cooperate and the science is not going to get done. So a big part of these high seas missions, that's what they're called, the high seas, is the crew selection. So in our case, it took 15 months for them to choose the crew to go on this mission. So ironically, the selection took longer than the mission itself. And then the next part is the crew cohesion. So that's what they're going to be studying on us during the 8 months, is how this crew of astronaut-like people is going to work together. So they tried to fit us well in terms of psychological profiles to make sure that we would be a good fit, that we will be able to collaborate and do all our tasks properly. And that's why throughout our mission, basically they're going to test a bunch of things on us. So every day we're going to be filling in a bunch of surveys and giving various samples, biological samples from us that they can monitor, for example, our stress levels, or you know, how happy or unhappy we are. We'll be wearing heart monitors to, again, monitor how we're feeling throughout the day, how much exercise we're getting and sleep and so on. And we'll be playing various games, including some virtual reality games focused on seeing how well we cooperate together to achieve a more difficult kind of task. So there's a lot of this kind of stuff we're going to be doing throughout the mission in order for them to collect data about how well they chose the crew or not, on top of the actual science we'll be doing. So, for example, most of the science will be focused on planetary exploration, so going into the field, doing EVAs, taking geological and biological samples, which I will be, some of them I'll be analyzing them in the hab, because there's a small kind of, let's say, laboratory there that I can do some analyses in, and then the rest I will take with me. And actually the rover I'll bring from Slovakia will help me collect these different samples.
Cool. That sounds amazing. I mean, that the virtual reality stuff, that's the holodeck from Star Trek, right? Can you take stuff with you? Can you take films and DVDs and stuff?
Yeah, so we can, and we're all bringing our own personal supply of stuff. But actually Mission Support apparently is going to be kind enough to send us some movies or music if we request something, okay, you know, that we forgot on Earth, and they'll supply us with that.
That's good.
So, don't worry. There'll be plenty of Star Trek, Star Wars, and all that kind of, The Martian, of course.
Of course.
We have this running joke that we're going to grow potatoes during our mission, you know, just test. But we're not going to use the same fertilizer Mark Watton used in The Martian.
Yeah. Fair enough. Yeah, no. Is The Martian going to be like your guide to how to survive then? Is that what you're going to do?
I think we might test some things or some ideas from The Martian, for example, like the potato growing.
Mm.
But again, unfortunately, because we're, say, the test subjects, we have very little control over a lot of things that we can and can't do during the mission. So most of what we are going to be doing is dictated by Mission Support, and we'll be given some autonomy during the mission to decide on things like our schedules or priorities for some of the projects. But a lot of things are set in stone and we just can't change them, unfortunately.
No, fair enough. But do you say 15 months of selection process?
Mm-hmm.
What was that sort of an involved selection process? Did you have to do tasks? Were you all in groups? What went on?
Yeah, so the first part was actually mostly filling in various online questionnaires. So the application, if I remember correctly, it came out in August 2016, and just for that alone, so it was open to the whole world. So basically anyone could apply, and you had to fill in various sections about your research background, whether you know you have experience going on expeditions to extreme environments, what your research focuses on, what kind of research would you like to do during the mission. And so it was a very extensive, say, questionnaire or let's say application form that you had to fill in. And then so that after that, they did like the first kind of filter. So they basically looked for people who fit astronaut-like criteria. So because they're looking for basically astronaut-like candidates for these missions. And so then after the first filter came a series of further online psychological questionnaires. So again, to assess kind of what personality we have, how we react to certain situations. And then the following part was a bit more stressful, mm-hmm. because you would be filmed while you do certain tasks or you respond to certain questions, and it's timed. So you have a limited amount of time to respond to certain questions or to deal with certain problems. You're being filmed the whole time. So it's quite a stressful situation in general, and that's what they're looking at. They're looking at how you deal with those kinds of situations, whether you can keep your calm and, you know, do the work you're meant to do.
Yeah.
And then after those kinds of, let's call it tests, came interviews. And so by that point, we got filtered out to, I would say, maybe 20, 30 people. And that's when I think when it got under 20, that's when they told us that, okay, now we're amongst a pool of highly qualified, you know, astronaut-like candidates. And the last part of the whole selection process will be trying to find a good fit of people in the crew. So at that point, it wasn't really just about your ability anymore. It was, you know, how you can put people that will fit well together into a crew.
Okay.
And that part took the longest, actually. So I think I found out about this time last year that I was selected amongst these highly qualified candidates. And it wasn't until November that I found out I was on the crew.
Yeah, yeah. You've done something like this before, but it wasn't for this amount of time, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right. I did two simulated missions before, and they were at the Mars Desert Research Station. And it's a program run by the Mars Society, so a different organization than here. It's basically NASA-funded, NASA-requested in many ways, but it's run in collaboration with the University of Hawaii, who are basically based here where the whole simulation takes place. Whereas, yeah, the other missions, so they were only a few weeks in length. And the first one, I was also the chief scientist of the mission. And the next one, which was actually a year ago, I was commander of the mission. And those were the crucial difference there is the length. And that's because those short-term missions are more focused on the science and technology that they're testing during those missions. So science and technology projects which are relevant to getting people to Mars or to actual, you know, living on Mars. So it was everything from, for example, during the first mission, we had some experiments from NASA focused on in-situ resource utilization, which the idea there is that, you know, instead of taking absolutely everything to Mars, you know, we could try and use some of the local resources. For example, this project was focused on trying to suck up moisture or water from the Martian soil, and then you would have another supply of water instead of just what you bring with you. And that water could be also broken down to make oxygen and maybe use the hydrogen for some form of fuel. So we were testing those sort of things. Or, for example, during the mission last year, it was also kind of an in-situ resource utilization project. This time we were looking at the Martian soil and whether we could make bricks out of it so that could potentially build some kind of habitat on Mars using, again, the local resources, the soil there, instead of bringing construction material with us. And, or, you know, my projects tend to revolve around planetary science things. So, for example, looking at life in extreme environments in those kind of simulated Martian-like environments and to see if something similar like that could potentially exist on Mars today or in the past. So while they were also studying us from a psychological aspect, we also had to fill in surveys and there was also a selection process to get in. The psychological part was not the most important thing. It was actually everyone had a bunch of their own research projects they were doing during the mission. And the psychology was just something going on in parallel. Whereas for this mission, the psychological aspect of the long duration mission is the most important thing. Yeah. And the research we do during the mission is great, but it's a bonus, basically.
As your missions are getting more involved and longer, it feels like we're getting closer to actually sending people to Mars, which is really what's happening.
That's the plan.
Yeah. Yeah. And are you going to go?
Of course. If I can, I'll definitely go.
Amazing. Amazing. Listen, how are you feeling going in then? You go in Thursday, right? We're on Tuesday as we record. You go in on Thursday, is that right?
That's right, on Thursday. So, well, it's Tuesday for you. It's still nighttime in Hawaii on Monday for me. So I have, yeah, just less than 3 days at this rate. But yeah, basically in about 2.5 days.
Okay.
They're essentially going to lock us up for 8 months on Mars.
Yeah.
So, how am I feeling? Well, it's, I must say, my feelings are quite mixed in many ways because on one hand, so the main reason why I'm doing this is as kind of you asked correctly, I am really hoping to go to space one day as an astronaut and super ideally go to Mars. But I'm a realist. So I know it's not exactly the easiest thing in the world. But I'm an optimist too. So I'm gonna hope that there's some chance that I'll be able to achieve that one day. But at least to get into space would be amazing. So that's why I'm kind of in my life doing everything possible to help me along this track. So even the research that I've been doing for the past many years, focusing on life in extreme environments, has always had implications for astrobiology. So, for example, trying to find life on Mars or traces of life that could have existed there in the past. And in the same way, these expeditions going to Greenland or Svalbard or various places around the world are also useful to train me to be able to work with a small group of people in extreme conditions, keep my calm during crisis situations, find good ways of leading people, because many times I was the expedition leader or commander of a mission. And this has really helped me then actually get to those simulated missions where I was selected for them, I think, thanks to all these skills that I acquired. And again, I think all of that cumulatively helped me get selected for this mission, because thanks to all these skills, I really fit most of, or maybe all of, the criteria for a classical astronaut. So that's why this mission is important for me, because it's a big step towards, again, that childhood dream, say, of becoming an astronaut. But I also know I'm going to learn a lot from this about teamwork and, again, working in extreme conditions. You know, I think our social interactions are going to get, everything is going to get escalated a lot, because you're just seeing the same three other faces all the time, every day, all day. So I think hopefully I will learn so much more about myself and other people during this mission. But then again, there's the flip side. You know, you're kind of losing control over your life and to some extent in your freedom for 8 months. Again, you're only with these same other people the whole time, and so on and so forth. So yes, of course, I'm a little bit worried, but I've kind of prepared myself for this physically and mentally for the last few months. I've prepared the people that I'm leaving behind in a way on Earth, all my students in Slovakia, my colleagues in my office. But we came up with good and hopefully functioning plans for them to be able to get on without me. So I feel, at this point, I feel like I've done everything I could have done. I prepared myself to best degree. I don't really have anything else to worry about. So now it's the excitement that it's actually starting to become stronger and stronger.
Yeah, awesome stuff. So good. So are you going to be okay to send us an update? It's like every week or something, just like a minute or something. Would that be okay?
Yeah, sure. I'll try and find something interesting to say every week.
Why did get a bit of balls? You find something. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure I will.
And you'll probably like notice, like in the first few, it's like, yeah, I'm here, it's all great, la. And then, you know, in a few months' time, like, oh, I had to fill in another survey. I can't take it anymore.
Amazing. I look forward to following it. And we'll put them in each of our episodes as we go along. It might be that we don't do one for a couple of weeks, so we'll have two updates in an episode or whatever. But thank you so much for doing that. That's amazing. And thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks so much for talking to us. And yeah, have an amazing mission. It's just so brilliant.
Thank you very much.
Have fun on Mars.
Thank you. Take care. We'll be keeping in touch.
Yeah, no, absolutely. One last thing, actually. When you watch The Martian or read The Martian or something, you need to send us a message after that and tell us what it feels like watching The Martian on Mars.
Okay, will do. Sounds like a plan.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Michaela.
All right. Take care. Bye.
Thanks so much, Michaela. I am just really, really excited to be able to do that, to bring you these updates from Michaela in our episodes as we go through the next 8 months. I know it's going to be brilliant. And someone else who appeared on that episode on The Martian back in 2015 was Ben. Now, those of you who are new listeners to the podcast won't know about Ben's poems. That is about to change. Hello, Ben. Welcome back to the Cosmic Shed.
Hi. Hi, it's good to be back. The shed has changed quite a bit since I was last here.
Yeah, we've got new roof stuff. We can watch films in here now, or indeed rocket launches. It's been a while since we had a poem.
Yeah, that's right. I've been slacking quite a bit. So for this poem, Andrew asked me to write something about a family going to live on the moon, which is why it's taken me such a long time. I was trying to get my head around that. he also asked me for the poem to be kind of in the shape of the moon and for it to be in the style of a Renku, which is a Japanese poem, which sort of has a few different voices in it. So it's not just one voice throughout the poem, but it's different people either writing the verses. There's a lot of rules in there. So in all that, it's taken me quite a while to get my head around it.
Are you basically saying that this is the reason why it wasn't on the Artemis episode?
Your arbitrary rules for the poem, or my laziness. One of the two. I'm not sure.
I can see the poem written down in front of me, and it's in an interesting shape.
It's kind of a crescent shape. I sort of drew out a structure to look like the crescent moon, and that sort of seemed to break itself down into four seasons, which obviously sits very well with the Japanese poetry style, but also I was thinking about the family's first year on the moon. So that's where this poem has come from.
Awesome. Obviously, we'll post what the poem looks like on the Cosmic Shed website, thecosmicshed.com.
Fantastic.
Our first picnic here, on scratchy synthetic grass beneath the black sky.
I stare out at the shadows. Your eyes reflect blue and green.
We long for real rain. Drops fall deliberately on soil shipped from home.
We watch our old world. Look up to trace a red wave sweeping north to south.
I imagine firework trails refracted through thick domed glass.
Our sterile quarters fill with plans for pageantry, rituals to mark time.
Our bodies prepare for a freeze that stays outside the habitat walls.
I see snow-capped lunar Alps, graceful space-suited skiers.
We drift like moonfish at a teeming solstice ball, a small shoal of three.
We search for flashes of brightly painted basalt, nestled in craters.
I foresee forests unfurled across Mare Vaporum.
Our patch of grey earth is pierced by yellow and white. We kneel down to look.
Thanks, Ben. And thank you very much to Kate Gardner, Jenny Glester, and James Dacey for providing the voices for the poem. We'll be back very soon with an episode on War Games when we're going back to Hawaii to speak to an astronomer there. And thank you very much for listening. Goodbye.
The Cosmic Shed.
Science fact.
Science fiction.
And everything in between.